Hi, Dave Emmer here. This is For the Record, program number 868, the assassination of Olof Palme. This is being recorded on October 15th of the year 2015. In this program, I'm going to be revisiting a number of things that I guess one could say are old but new again. In some of our discussions with Peter Lavenda, we have talked about not only Colonia Dignitat, but Operation Condor. That was an assassination consortium of Latin American dictatorships, which in turn was networked with European fascists associated with the World Anti-Communist League, or WACL. It also was heavily networked and featured the participation of a major element of CIA as well. Olof Palme was the Prime Minister of Sweden. He was shot to death on February 28, 1986, almost 30 years ago. The killing has never been solved, or at least not formally at any rate. What we're going to do in this program is to examine an article about Olof Palme's assassination. It comes from an article about Olof Palme and his killing that was authored by Henrik Kruger. And this is from the Swedish publication Press. And the entire article, or almost the entire article, is in the description for the record program number 868. Henrik Kruger is, again, a freelance Danish journalist and is the author of the landmark text, The Great Heroin Coup, that we have used many, many times. By the way, Trine Day Publishers is going to be republishing a new edition of The Great Heroin Coup with some 75 pages of new text. So simply keep your eyes peeled for that book. I will have information about that republication when that has taken place. Now, what we're going to be looking at in this program are how many threads winding through Latin America and Europe connect with elements that were involved in the Iran-Contra affair, things that the Christic Institute in their lawsuit, now called, by the way, the Romero Institute, things that they referred to as the Enterprise, a series of self-funding entities that in turn were part of a larger ongoing series of covert operations. Drug smuggling figures prominently in this. One of the most important operatives in CIA history, a very important fellow named Theodore Shackley, whom we looked at great length in the AFA programs, in our material from Henrik Kruger's The Great Heroin Coup, will figure prominently in this. We are also going to be taking a look at the violent elements that remain in place for the Ustashi, the violent World War II Croatian fascists who were aligned with Nazi Germany. I received very powerful support from the Vatican, and that also figure prominently in WACL and in Operation Condor. Again, when you have the Prime Minister of a European country who is murdered and the killing remains unsolved 30 years later, that is an indication of just how powerful the forces are that were covering up that killing. I also want to note in passing that the Swedish fascist and Scandinavian fascist milieu that appears to have been involved in some aspect of the assassination and its cover-up is also what the late Stieg Larsson looked at to an extent in his novels. It is also the Swedish fascist milieu to which Carl Lundstrom, who financed the Pirate Bay site that featured WikiLeaks for many years, that Swedish Carl Lundstrom is part and parcel to that Swedish fascist milieu. So by way of refreshing for older listeners and introducing younger listeners to the world of the Iran-Contra scandal, Operation Condor, the enterprise, what the Christic Institute, now called the Romero Institute, was investigating, and the networks involving the Ustashi and Operation Condor, we are going to revisit this article from December of 1988, and almost the entire article is available in the description for the record 868, skipping down. In 1976, when Olaf Palme participated in the International Socialist Congress in Madrid, he was the gathering's best protected person. Prior to his traveling to Madrid, the head of the Swedish Social Democrats had been cautioned that Palme was on the top of a Latin American death squad's hit list. The leader of that group was the Chilean Michael Vernon Townley. Townley and his group by this time had a legacy of blood on their hands from a long series of assassinations. Townley had worked for the CIA's Operation Track 2, a campaign of sabotage and terror that resulted in Chile's socialist leader Salvador Allende's overthrow and Pinochet's takeover of power in Chile. Afterward, Townley began to figure into the ranks of the Chilean intelligence service. There, he led death patrols which murdered many prominent exiles in Latin America, Europe, and the U.S. The most famous of these murders was carried out in the open street of Washington, D.C. There, Chile's former foreign minister and ambassador to the U.S., Orlando Letelier, was slain by a bomb placed in his car. Townley had undertaken the planning for that murder together with the CIA-trained Cuban exiles. All of this came out during the 1978 trial of Orlando Letelier's assassins, in which Townley was a prime witness. From this trial, it was further revealed that Townley literally had a death list that had Palme's name at its top. At the same time, Palme himself received a report that informed him that Townley, as a Chilean intelligence agent, had been in Stockholm in 1976 to plan an assassination attempt against him. It further stated that Townley had also been in Madrid during the Socialist Congress, together with the Italian terrorist Stefano Della Chiaia. Because of the keen watch over Palme, Townley and Della Chiaia were not successful in carrying out their assassination plans. Parenthetically, by the way, this past week, the complicity of the Chilean Secret Service in killing Orlando Letelier came out. It has been known for some time, but it now came out from official U.S. government documents. And I would also note that Stefano Della Chiaia is an individual we looked at great length in AFA program number 19. He is one of the prime architects of the strategy of tension, and an intimate of Klaus Barbie and of the P2 Lodge as well. Continuing with Henrik Kruger's essay about the assassination of Olaf Palme. 10 years after these assassination plans at Townley's, Palme was murdered in Stockholm. Immediately after the murder, Swedish police investigated whether it could have been Chile's intelligence service putting their old threat to murder the Swedish prime minister into effect. Two agents were sent to the U.S. to interrogate Townley. Today, the former murderer lives under false identity in a secret location in the U.S. The police agents were able to get his new name and address from the FBI. In return for their questions, they got nothing out of Townley. He is a man who now lives in perpetual dread of being liquidated by the circles he formerly collaborated with when he was a hitman. By the time of the interview, he had been out of circulation for 8 years. Townley was only able to speak about what he did during that earlier period, so the inquiry led to naught. The Swedish investigators therefore concluded that the Chileans couldn't have been behind the murder of Palme. Back in his secret location in the U.S., Michael Townley must have been surprised at the Swedish police's basic lack of insight. They were apparently not aware of the fact that he had not worked exclusively and only for the Chilean intelligence service. Closer investigation perhaps would have led the police on a different and more interesting trail. The Swedes would have discovered that Townley was active in and had worked for an organization named Condor, C-O-N-D-O-R, with threads leading back to a worldwide network of fanatical anti-communists. Condor was an organization for carrying out assassinations. The Bonzer Plan, B-A-N-Z-E-R, named after the Bolivian dictator Hugo Bonzer, was an especially frightening and long-term operation of Condors. It consisted of the arrest, torture, and murder of those nuns, priests, and bishops displaying a social and political conscience within the Latin American countries with dictatorships. The Bonzer Plan, which was originally agreed upon in 1975, has its offshoots into the 1980s. Death squads of the extreme right have liquidated nuns and priests by the scores. The deaths of four American nuns in El Salvador awakened great international notice, but it was the assassination of El Salvadorian Archbishop Oscar Romero in 1980 that caused the greatest uproar. The murder was condemned worldwide. Who, though, really stood behind Condor? Today, it is known that Operation Condor was to a large extent supported and financed by nothing less than the CIA. It was disclosed in 1974 by an American Senate subcommittee that CIA agents in Latin America had functioned as torture instructors. The CIA's chief for its Latin American branch was, at this time, Theodore Shackley. He is a person we are going to meet many, many times in this article. This disclosure about the torture instruction gave rise to a public scandal, and 64 agents were sent back to the U.S. By the way, this obviously foreshadows fairly directly the uproar over, quote, enhanced interrogation, unquote, that is ongoing and that manifested during the aftermath of the U.S. invasion of Iraq and also the War on Terror. Continuing with Henry Krueger's essay, the financing of Condor shows a great deal of the organization's international character and proportions. The agents in Condor were supported economically by WFC, the World Finance Corporation, the gigantic banking system that was set up in Miami by Cuban exiles. The money in the bank stemmed principally from the sale of narcotics. At the WFC, it was laundered, the money that is, and then channeled to the death squads and the Cuban exile terrorist groups which assisted Condor personnel in a long succession of Latin American terrorist actions during the 1970s. More about this later. Common to nearly all of these terrorists were their connections to WACL, the Worldwide Organization of Anti-Communists. It was at the 1975 gathering of WACL's Latin American section in Rio de Janeiro that the plan to murder the socially aware and liberation theology-inclined priests, nuns, and bishops was agreed upon. The leaders of Operation Condor were practically all WACL members from those countries in Latin America that had dictatorial regimes at the time. It was within this WACL complex that assassin Michael Townley functioned. This was the labyrinth which the Swedish police apparently didn't know about when they were in the U.S. interrogating him. It was not only Chilean, but WACL people that were behind the plan in 1976 to murder Palme. They hated Olaf Palme for his involvement in human rights struggles and for his support of oppressed people's battles for justice. It is next to impossible to know WACL's true dimensions. Under a respectable exterior is concealed a network of dangerous undercurrents reaching over the entire planet. Common to all supporters is a violent hatred of all communists.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Michael is a worldwide network of ultra-righteous communist haters, an umbrella organization which functions as the contact point for the far-right groups responsible for much of the fascist terror around the world. Both the Swedish press and private researchers have spoken of a right-wing extremist conspiracy and wacko connections to the Palme murder. It has probably not resulted in more than just talk, because few really knew anything about wacko, and because of its dispersed and unwieldy nature and structure. Instead, the press has concentrated on wacko's visible surface layer and not on those treacherous operational undercurrents. Wacko's official facade is the General Secretariat of the right-wing Moon Religious Movement's building in Seoul, South Korea. Wacko holds yearly official congresses and outwardly looks like a nice, unquote, organization. These congresses were even visited by Danish politicians such as Mogens, Gilstrup, MOGENSGLISTRUP, Pia Kiersgaard, KGEARSGARD, and conservative housing minister Agnete Lausten. That's LAUSTSEN. I'm probably mispronouncing these Swedish names, but again, the correct spellings are in the article that will be in the description for the record 868 when it is published. But an attempt to understand WACL as an acronym for an ordinary organization is a mistake. Skipping down. Within WACL's framework, these right-wing cancers come into contact with one another and maintain that close association. Through the WACL network, one can find the tools, partners, and expertise in and economic support for political repression, propaganda, manipulation, weapons, torture, terrorism, and assassination. If one is interested in murder campaigns, one can draw on the WACL network anywhere in the world. In the last 20 years, the name of WACL has, in fact, emerged in connection with countless criminal activities. Among the most horrifying activities with which WACL was associated were the death squads which have wrought devastation in Guatemala. Over 25,000 lives had been terminated within only 4 years in the early 1970s. The death squadron's leaders were members of CAL, WACL's Latin American branch. Among other victims were the 72 persons killed when a civilian Cuban airliner exploded over Barbados in 1975. An entire Cuban sports team perished in that flight. Behind the terrorist deed was an organization which included members of the WACL Cuban exile group Alpha 66. That is merely a selection of two examples, but there are many, many more. By the way, that airliner bombing was masterminded by Orlando Bosch of the Karoo organization, which in turn is part of what Henry Kruger in the Great Heroin Coup termed the Internationale Fascista. He was protected by both George H.W. Bush and Jeb Bush in Florida. Jeb Bush is very close not only to the Cuban exile community there, but ran interference for Orlando Bosch. So, by the way, did George H.W. Bush, who was head of CIA when Orlando Letelier was blown up in Washington, D.C. Resuming again with Henry Kruger's article talking about the WACL planning against Palme. Skipping down. Nowhere did abhorrence for Palme thrive quite so strongly as among WACL members. It was an old hatred stemming from Vietnam War days. It increased with Palme's support for both Cuba and Chile under Salvador Allende, and later his support for the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. This hatred was held with a passion. In the last year, it has come out that persons with connections to WACL probably had, in the months leading up to Palme's death, even more with which to feed their hate. Today, Many things point toward a host of powerful persons with long-time Wackel connections having been involved in munitions makers Bofors' extensive weapons smuggling to Iran. When Palme, a short time before his death, considered stopping these Bofors dealings with Iran, these people presumably had an obvious economic and ideological motive to stop him. And in such an instance, as so often before, they would avail themselves of the Wackel network. In this connection, one fact is very important. The people that were involved in the Iranian weapons deals had earlier had connections to Operation Condor. In 1976, the Condor organization had condemned Olof Palme to death. One of the men involved, and the most central, is named Theodore Shackley, S-H-A-C-K-L-E-Y. Shockley was the leader behind some of the CIA's largest and most bloody actions of the 60s and 70s. He, together with close collaborators, was responsible for the campaigns of death in Laos, Vietnam, and South America. They are sworn Wackel supporters. Yet today, having officially left the CIA, his powers are stronger than ever. He was, with his team, behind the Iran-Contra scandal, for just one example. Shackley is a unique person with a power that seems almost incomprehensible. He is the man that stood behind a long succession of the CIA's most bloody and illegal operations beginning in the early 1960s. During a lightning 25-year career in the CIA, he made himself a legendary reputation. Shockley came to be called the Blonde Ghost because of the secretiveness surrounding him. Shockley's contributions to the efforts of the CIA have been so great that they have even been designated as a kind of invisible government, unquote. Of course, he has not operated entirely on his own initiative. There is a basis to his power, a political and economic shadow land with apparently enormous powers have had a use for him. Who are they precisely cannot be known, but Shackley is a person with enormous skills and an unchallenged organizational capability. It is said that among other things he's done, he's carried out those foreign policies that the official American government did not want to be seen as having connections to. All who have worked under Shackley in the CIA have said they were afraid of him. Some were so fearful that they have tried to have as little as possible to do with him. Others have had a merely fanatic sense of loyalty to him, also based on their fear of him. He is described as arrogant and as having a complete lack of scruples in his war against communism. The enormous toll in Laos for his operations have earned him the additional nickname of the Butcher, unquote. In 1961, at only 36, Shackley was already the CIA station chief in Miami. The Miami station was the most important and largest station outside of the Langley, Virginia headquarters. His closest colleagues were agents Thomas Klein and David Atlee Phillips, who would remain his loyal assistants throughout the years. To carry out his terrorist actions, he recruited Cuban exiles from mafia boss Santos Traficante's narcotics organization. Traficante supplied both personnel and expertise for Operation Mongoose, the CIA's secret war against Castro and Cuba in the early 1960s. He also took part personally in the planning of the CIA's assassination attempts against Fidel Castro. Traficante was the USA's largest narcotics importer, and it was he who supposedly gave Theodore Shackley the idea of financing the most sensitive operations with narcotics profits, something that would soon become Shackley's specialty. Later, when Shackley was transferred to Laos, he allied himself with the heroin general Vang Pao and the warriors of Vang Pao's Mayo tribes. The link to the CIA's infamous war in Laos was a death campaign in which tens of thousands of men, women, and children were killed by the Mayo soldiers along with American Green Berets from the Special Operations Group under the leadership of General John Singlaub. Under Singlaub, there worked a young Lieutenant Oliver North and also an Air Force Lieutenant Major Richard Secord. All three would become leading figures in the Iran-Contra affair 20 years later. Singlaub was, at that general period of time, the world director of LACO. The campaign of death in Laos was controlled by Shackley. Shackley, North, Secord, and the others who worked together there have come to be known as the Secret Team. This, by the way, is from a book by Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty called The Secret Team, the CIA and its allies in control of the world. It also was applied to the Iran-Contra team by the Christic Institute in their RICO suit against some of the principal figures. Continuing. After a while, Shackley became the CIA's chief of station in Vietnam. He was later called home in 1972 by his superiors to steer the CIA's secret operations in Latin America. He continued his incredible career and became the chief of Operation Track 2. Track 2 was a campaign of sabotage and terror that led to Allende's overthrow in Chile and Pinochet's takeover of power. That was the starter's gun, the beginning of the CIA's control of and engagement in death and terror campaigns throughout South America. Shackley arranged for the training of Cuban exiles in terrorism, who then traveled around assisting death patrols in torture and murder. Both the death squads and the anti-Castro Cuban exiles had connections to WACL. Then some began to wonder when Asians began to appear among the death patrols. It soon became apparent that these were some of the male warriors Shackley had trained in Laos and then brought to Latin America. Naturally, the financing of that extensive project did not come from the official CIA. Several of Shackley's Cuban exiles established a huge banking system called the World Finance Corporation in Miami, where mafia boss Traficante's money was laundered and then channeled into Condor and the Cuban exiles' terror groups such as Alpha 66, Omega 7, and Caru. The banking system was exposed and forced to close its doors after a police investigation in the beginning of 1979. The policeman who headed the inquiry was stopped by the CIA, but before he was muzzled, he was able to tell the press that not less than 28 CIA agents had worked in the bank. The secret team had also operated another narcotics bank, the Nugenham Bank in Australia, with over 40 affiliates around the world. The bank was principally used for weapons and narcotics transactions. The names of the companies which had done business via the bank came out in 1982 when a large Australian government report disclosed information about the bank. One of these firms was Bofors, the Swedish weapons manufacturer. That was the first time that Bofors' name had been connected with the Shackley crowd. By the mid-1970s, Shackley had been made deputy chief of covert operations worldwide in the CIA. Skipping down.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing in, but by no means exclusively, economic and financial matters.
But Shackley apparently was too indispensable and powerful to be just fired from the agency in any ordinary manner. He was fired, by the way, by Jimmy Carter. He had proceeded outside of the agency in such a manner that today It is very difficult to tell what is his secret team and what is the official CIA. Apparently, they couldn't manage without an entire division's experience and expertise. Shackley and his team were now more active behind the scenes than they had been at any time before. Shackley's close associate, David Attlee Phillips, headed the Association of Former Intelligence Officers, or AFIO, which came to function in some cases as an intelligence service for WACL. One of the two from Shackley's corps that trained terrorists in Libya was the current fugitive Frank Turple. He once said to an American journalist, quote, It is in reality the a-holes from AFIO that run the CIA from the outside as a shadow leadership. Ted Shackley, David Atlee Phillips, James Jesus Angleton, and Lucian Colleen, unquote. Shackley had and has well in order his world of behind-the-scenes political operations. The most important support group is the American Security Council. It represents the U.S.'s military-industrial complex and constitutes the major portion of the USA's representation in WACO. Shackley's group finances its operations with weapons and narcotics smuggling. Simultaneous with those operations, his operatives struggle in their savage war against leftist forces on the entire face of the earth. Slowly but surely, they have built up an amazing shadowland economic base which resembles a multinational corporation. The network through which these operations takes place is called the Enterprise. The lead figures, in addition to Shackley himself, are Thomas Kleins, Richard Secord, and Albert Hakim. These names also come from the top of the lists of Iran-Contra hearings witnesses. The Enterprise has a plethora of small companies. Some Shackley owns on paper, others list him as a consultant or as an officer on the board of directors. In fact, it was Shackley's team that started the entire Irangate scandal. Among the many places in which this has been established is in the Tower Report. Shackley has conceded that it was he who met with the Iranian weapons and narcotics dealer Gorbanifar in Hamburg. Also, that it was he who brought the Iranian proposal on an exchange of hostages for weapons to Washington. The Enterprise was connected to the weapons deals that came out of this, in fact. Part of the money from Iran wound up going to the Nicaraguan Contras. Another portion drifted directly into the pockets of Enterprise personnel, and a portion has vanished into the blue altogether. One can only guess as to what has become of it. The real drama in the Iran-Contra scandal did not come out in the Washington hearings, which were transmitted to the world's television screens. In the hearings, only a little was unveiled. Florida was the happening place, even though this was in relative public silence. A huge lawsuit was being prepared in Florida involving large-scale cocaine smuggling in connection with Iran-Contra. This, of course, involved the Shackley people. The legal case was left to drift and then was stopped by Edward Meese, Reagan's attorney general. However, a Senate investigation continued. Simultaneously, there arose a civil suit against the same Shackley crowd and the earlier WACO chief John Singlaub for the bombing and assassination attempt on former Contra leader Aden Pastora. 7 people were killed in the bombing, including 4 journalists. That, by the way, interrupting, is the lawsuit that I alluded to earlier that was filed by the Christic Institute. It ultimately was unsuccessful. I would note that Judge Vance, on the appellate court panel that was going to hear their suit was killed by a mail bomb. Continuing, one of the main witnesses in the 2 cases was Gene Wheaton, a former high-level U.S. military intelligence officer. He was stationed at an important post in Iran during the late 1970s. He, together with 2 colleagues, just happened across the illegal transactions of Shackley's bunch in the Middle East and then prepared a report on these activities. When Wheaton's 2 colleagues were on their way to Washington with the report, they were very conveniently murdered and the report vanished. Since the murders, Wheaton has used his spare time to seek additional evidence against the Enterprisers. The primary author of this article talked with Wheaton in his Los Angeles home in March of 1987, before he testified as a witness. At that time, Wheaton had a list containing 17 names which he was certain represented persons murdered by the Enterprise group throughout the years. Among those listed was a former CIA agent, Kevin Mulcahy. Mulcahy died the day before he would have given testimony in the lawsuit against the World Finance Corporation, the narco banking system. WFC laundered narcotics money and then transferred it to Shackley's Cuban exile terrorists around Latin America. Mulcahy was found in the Maryland woods, not far from where the motel where he was secretly waiting for the trial. His body was found with his pants bound around his ankles. Quote, "I am myself as right-wing as the people in Shackley's team," said Wheaton. "I can accept much of what they do, but not the murder of colleagues," unquote. Gene Wheaton's life has been threatened by the Shackley squad. He has responded by sharing his information with as many people as possible. In this manner, he hopes to diminish the likelihood of his becoming a target for assassination as well. Since the interview, Wheaton has additionally sworn out depositions stating that Shackley has a covert firm located on Andros Island in the Bahamas. This firm, unquote, trains assassins. Wheaton's list of 17 murdered people appears not to have been complete. During preliminary investigations for the Miami trial alone, four new witnesses died. The smuggler and pilot Barry Seal was shot down. A similar thing happened to the world-famous speedboat builder Don Arnau. They both had close connections with cocaine smuggler George Morales. Another chief witness, Stephen Carr, was found dead of a drug overdose, and so on and so forth. These witnesses could have been very dangerous to Shackley's group. For example, they could have substantiated the accusations about narcotics. They could have verified that the very airplanes that flew weapons from Florida to the Contras in Costa Rica and Honduras returned with cargoes of cocaine. According to the arrested smugglers, it was some of Shackley's Cuban exile weapons transporters that headed weapons smuggling to the Contras. Today, it is still too early to say if it was, in fact, Olaf Palme's attempts to stop further smuggling of weapons, which cost him his life, in much the same manner as the four Miami trial witnesses. Palme had tried to stop Beaufort's extensive weapons transfers to Iran. There is much, however, that indicates that a close connection between Beaufort's and the Enterprise players existed. As was mentioned before, Beaufort's had done business via the illegal Australian Nugan Hand Bank, a bank that by 1977 chiefly dealt in weapons and narcotics money. The bank was managed by Enterprise personnel. The Danish ship Iria, which smuggled Beaufort's weapons to both Iran and the Contras, was owned by Dolmy Business Incorporated. Behind Dolmy stood two from within the Enterprise, Richard Secord and Albert Hakim. Beaufort transferred 188 million kroner, about $30 million, to the Panamanian company Svenska Incorporated, S-V-E-N-S-K-A. The leader of this firm was the notorious drug and weapons smuggler Stephen Samos. He was a close business partner of the people in the Enterprise and deeply involved in the Contragate scandal. Part of the money is known to have almost certainly been employed for bribes in connection with Beaufort's multi-million dollar deals with India. Steve Samos, again S-A-M-O-S, also led another company, International Management and Trust Corporation. This was a cover firm which did not function. Instead, its employees worked in amalgamated commercial enterprises. A portion of the enterprise's support to the Contras went through amalgamated commercial enterprises. The Beaufort's weapons, which Iran had sought through Swedish weapons dealer Carl Eric Smit, S-M-I-T-Z, were often transported on the planes of St. Lucia Airways, which was operated and owned by Enterprise folks and directed with help from Oliver North. If the Enterprise benefited financially from the Beaufort's deliveries, and if Olaf Palme attempted to stop these deliveries of weapons and thus the money stream from Beaufort's, then would have Shackley and his men and also Iran's Ayatollah Khomeini had quite a motive to murder the Swedish Prime Minister. In such a case, they would probably have used the Wacko network as they had so often before. They would have had a here-and-now need to to remove him. They are so skillful at such things that they could have arranged it quickly. When Olof Palme was murdered, there sat in a Swedish prison a man with an intimate knowledge of both Condor and Wackel. His organization had previously threatened to murder the entire Palme family. Despite that, the Swedish police are only now beginning to become interested in Miro Barasic, M-I-R-O, last name B-A-R-E-S-I-C. This interest comes over 1 year after Barasic had been released and had boarded a flight to Paraguay. When Palme was murdered, an international terrorist and murderer complete with an enormous knowledge of Condor and Wackel was right there in Sweden. 10 years earlier, when a death list complete with Palme's name at its top circulated among the Condor crowd in Latin America, this man found himself high up in the Condor hierarchy. His name is Miro Barasic, and his story is nothing short of fantastic. Barasic is an extreme-right Croatian who is connected to the Wackel organization through the ABN, the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. ABN is an organization that collaborated with the Nazis during the Second World War. On April 7th of 1971, Barasic, together with another Croatian, tortured and then murdered the Yugoslavian ambassador to Sweden. On this first time around, Barasic didn't succeed in escaping the Swedish authorities. He was arrested, but before the trial, the murderer's comrades threatened to murder Palme, his wife Lisbeth, and all three of their children if the murderer's sentences are greater than 5 years in prison. The threats were taken very seriously. When Palme spoke to the May Day trial in Norrup King, Sweden, he was surrounded by a veritable army of security people. The two Croatians were sentenced to life imprisonment. Following that, they managed to escape from Cum Laude prison, but were caught and jailed again. Then, in September of 1972, their comrades seized an SAS plane in Malmo, Sweden. The world's eyes were riveted on the hostage drama. Sometime later, the world heard from the Croatian terrorists. The two ambassadorial murderers and an additional five other imprisoned Croatians must now be surrendered. Otherwise, they threatened to blow up a plane with the 86 passengers aboard. The Swedish government saw no other way out except to yield, and the two murderers were brought aboard the plane. The SAS pilots were forced to fly to Spain. There, the Croatians were at first imprisoned, but the rightist government of Franco refused to surrender them up to Sweden, and in the beginning of 1974, they were given permission to travel to the terrorists' paradise of Paraguay in Latin America. There, they quickly connected up with a Croatian Wackel group that functioned there as a death squad. Then things began to go well for Miro Barasic. He began to work directly under Condor's infamous chief within Paraguay, Pastor Coronel, the head of the security police.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site also features many articles not included in programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
Coronel is a horrifying gentleman whose police force has specialized in advanced torture techniques. An American lawyer relates this macabre incident. One time, Coronel, again C-O-R-O-N-E-L, had a really fat catch, a leader of the small, illegal Communist Party. Coronel had the Communist brought directly into his office, where he promptly shot him twice in the head with his Magnum. Coronel then ordered the head cut off and took it to the presidential palace. His message was clear. He wanted to demonstrate how efficient he was at maintaining the nation free from Communists. So it was to Coronel that Barasic became the right hand. Coronel is his country's representative to Wackel and participates eagerly in the organization's meetings. Barisic was made the chief instructor for Cornell's agents. By this time, he had changed his name to Tony Saric, S-A-R-I-C, so he could travel freely. The murder of Tony Saric, alias Miro Barisic, was then about to become a big gun. Cornell had full confidence in him, and at the end of 1977, Barisic came to the U.S. on a diplomatic passport. He became nothing less than the chief of security for Paraguay's embassy in Washington, D.C. There were 21 delegates. He was also made the personal bodyguard to Paraguayan ambassador to the U.S., Escobar, who also was a WACL delegate. But Barisic's story is not over yet. At the legendary WACL conference held in Washington, D.C., from the 27th to 30th of April of 1978, Saric appeared as the Croatian delegate. The yearly WACL conferences have a reputation of being a framework for the greatest showings of international terrorists, neo-Nazis, and fascists since the Second World War. They swarm with right-wing extremists. At that conference, for example, there were 21 delegates from the Cuban exile terror group Alpha 66 alone. Also in attendance were a series of Swedish right-wing extremists who we will meet further on in this article. 2 years later, things start to go wrong for Tony Saric, a.k.a. Miro Barisic. After having just won a large karate competition in the United States, he jubilantly ran around the arena with a Croatian flag. Among those in the audience were two FBI agents who found something in Saric's conduct suspicious. They knew that some bomb saboteurs in the U.S. have had connections with Croatians having connections to Paraguay. When they returned to the FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C., they dove into the extensive files and, after some hunting around, were shocked to discover that Saric was identical with the wanted murderer and terrorist Miro Barisic. The hammer fell, Barisic was arrested, and after 1 year, he was returned to Sweden. But he was evidently no ordinary prisoner. In prison, he was a celebrity. When it was announced that he was about to marry a Swedish woman, there was talk that he would be released. According to Swedish press reports, a diplomat-like man, unquote, who traveled in a big car, presented him with quantities of dollars as a wedding gift. Who that man was is a story that has not yet unraveled. However, it is an indispensable fact that the terrorist and murderer Barisic has been granted leave from prison many times, often without escorts. Later in December of 1987, Miro Barisic was released and together with his wife boarded a flight to his beloved Paraguay. Miro Barisic is an interesting figure because of the information he could have provided the Swedish police regarding WACL and Condor. Furthermore, he was of interest because of an intuitive feeling on the part of Lisbeth Palme immediately after the murder. She told the Swedish press that she felt that her husband was murdered by Croatian terrorists and that she had a feeling that there was something familiar about the murderer. Only now are the Swedish police beginning seriously to turn their attention toward the Croatian right-wing extremists. This after Barisic has been released. And released despite the fact that his circles earlier had been connected with the Swedish terrorist actions and murder, including having threatened to liquidate the entire Palme family. The authorities had not noticed that the same circles were closely linked to the Latin American groups that had had Palme on their death list. Just now, a group of Swedish police are in West, by the way, this is at the time the press article of December of 1988 was coming to... Well, basically, it was in the wings, so to speak. So this, the time period they're talking about is late 1988. Just now, a group of Swedish police are in West Germany to investigate some of the Croatian exiles who belong to the Ustaše circles around Barisic. One thing is certainly thought-provoking. Barisic, the murderer and terrorist, has only served 7 years of his sentence at the time when the world was taking a hard line against terrorists. Only now, just as this article is being written in December of 1988, has it been learned that Barisic had leave on February 28, 1986, the very day that Palme was murdered. What occupied his time that day is not known. His Croatian friends have provided him with an ally. Also recently disclosed is that Yugoslavia had repeatedly and unsuccessfully pressed to have Barisic extradited. Instead, he was given his freedom in 1987 and flew off to Paraguay. Several times before Palme's murder, Barisic had presented petitions for clemency. These requests were blocked by Palme, who intervened personally, according to the Swedish social democratic paper Aftonbladet. Leniency came after Palme's assassination. The broad and multi-branched Wackel network has supporters worldwide. When Olof Palme was killed, four Scandinavian Wackel adherents with expertise in getaway routes and deep connections into the Swedish police could have been found in Sweden. Though it should be emphasized that this does not constitute proof of any direct connection to the Palme murder, it is suggestive of what ought to be investigated. The Barisic trail leads directly into the Wackel network. All of the Croatian exiles around Barisic were Wackel people and part of the same labyrinthine underworld which Shockley and the Iran-Contra team had drawn upon. The Bofors trail also leads into Wackel. This, however, is not the only trail with Swedish connections that points toward Wackel. At the time of the Palme murder, two neo-Nazis with international getaway route expertise and connections to Wackel were in Sweden. Bear in mind that the day of the murder of Palme, Miro Barisic was basically on leave. He was released from prison on his own recognizance temporarily, so that is quite suspicious. Continuing here. This, however, is not the only trail with Swedish connections that points toward Wackel. At the time of the Palme murder, two neo-Nazis with international getaway route expertise and connections to Wackel were in Sweden. We need to backwind the calendar to April of 1978, when the infamous Washington, D.C. Wackel Conference was in session. As mentioned previously, Barisic was present under the pseudonym Tony Saric, S-A-R-I-C. Despite that, many must have recognized him. Among those who no doubt did were two Swedes, Ake J. Ek, a.k.a. J. period E.K., and Anders Larsson, A-N-D-E-R-S, L-A-R-S-S-O-N, as well as the Norwegian Tor Peter Hadland, H-A-D-L-A-N-D. The remainder of this article will deal with these three Scandinavian connections. We will take them in turn. Tor Peter Hadland first, along with his connections to another Norwegian Nazi, Erik Blücher. Hadland was the leader of the Norwegian neo-Nazis party group, the Norwegian Front Stormtroopers. When the Norwegian Front Stormtroopers began in 1977 to appear in connection to Wackel, it was Hadland who represented these Norwegian Nazis at the Wackel meetings held around the world. Hadland was Erik Blücher's right-hand man. Blücher, as leader of the Norwegian neo-Nazis, had several times been involved in scandals involving both military training of young neo-Nazis and illegal weapons in Norway. In 1979, along with Hadland and other European Nazis, Blücher, B-L-U-C-H-E-R, attempted to stage a power coup within the European branch of Wackel. A more moderate group, however, was victorious. The two neo-Nazis were forced to leave Wackel officially, but continued to work within Wackel behind the scenes. Then, in 1981, Blücher's and Holland's paths diverged for 2 years. Hadland took up residence in Örebro, Sweden, and Blücher traveled to London, where he quickly contacted the neo-Nazi circles who had operated a getaway route called Brown Aid. This escape route center helped many, among others, 23 Italian terrorists. Two of these Italians had been sought in connection with the massive bombing of the Bologna train station in Italy. This getaway routing center was exposed in 1981 by the British television station Grenada. After the exposure, the center needed both a new international getaway travel secretary found and to be built up again. According to British sources, Eric Blucher became that new secretary. In 1983, the English police had started to suspect Blucher, and he traveled to Sweden, where his old friend Tor Paper Hadland had procured him an apartment. Blucher signed his name as Eric Olson, O-L-S-E-N. Exactly what Blucher, the escape route expert, and Hadland, the organizer, did after that, we can only speculate about. Certain of the circumstances surrounding their further movements are unknown, but it has been possible to sketch and outline them. In November of 1984, Tor Peter Hadland abandoned Örebro and fled to an apartment located at 32 Blocksundsvägen in Stockholm's suburb of Handen, H-A-N-D-E-N. That's B-L-O-C-K-S-T-E-N-V-A-G-E-N is the street. Blucher often stayed at the same address. Less than 1 year later, in September of 1985, Blucher was living in a slum clearance apartment in Helsingborg at 15C Blakulagatan. This address is not far from the border crossing point to Denmark, although Blucher was never there. Blucher additionally established a firm named Edelweiss Survival. And we'll talk more about what these people were doing. Suffice it to say, we are looking at a global network. We're looking at people who were not only militant anti-communists, and many of them linked to Operation Condor, elements of CIA, the Enterprise, wanted to kill Palme for his support for the Sandinistas, for Salvador Allende, and others. I would also note that they were part of the WACL network, and the Croatian delegate to the WACL conference in 1978 was Miro Barisic, a.k.a. Tony Saric, who had murdered helped to torture to death the Yugoslavian ambassador to Sweden. He was then released when some of his associates hijacked an SAS plane and threatened to blow up the plane and kill the 86 hostages / passengers unless Barisic and his associates were released. They were. He then went to Paraguay, rather, where he became part of the Paraguayan WACL death squads associated with Operation Condor. He then became a personal bodyguard to Paraguay's ambassador to the U.S. And what we're going to do in part two of the assassination of Olof Palme is to link the Shackley, Condor, Barisic networks with a Scandinavian fascist milieu that would have been in a position to determine Olof Palme's comings and goings. By the way, I would also note that the Bofors firm has strong links to a number of prominent people associated with the Bormann Network and with Third Reich Industry. We'll talk about those in part two of this program. We've been reading from an article from the Danish magazine Presse of December of 1988, authored by Henrik Kruger, the freelance Danish journalist who authored The Great Heroine. It was called On the WACL Trail, and it's about the assassination of Olof Palme. This concludes For the Record Program 868, the Olof Palme Assassination Part 1. This has been recorded on October 15th of the year 2015. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.